Okay, I'm back again. My presentation is titled The Beauty of the Islamic Renaissance, which could sound a bit odd in the world today. Because when you say the word Islamic nowadays, it triggers associations with terrorism, extremism, and fundamentalism. Many of these associations have, of course, certain basis in reality, but that reality is almost completely an artificial construction of political, strategic, and intelligence institutions that have intended to keep the world divided and conquered. Militant Islam is a relatively modern phenomenon and became known especially when the United States, Britain, and Saudi Arabia financed, armed, and trained the so-called Mujahideen in Afghanistan to fight against the Soviet army in the 1980s. Of course, the British intelligence and later the American intelligence had already worked since the 1920s and 1930s to develop the Muslim Brotherhood as an alternative to the patriotic nationalist governments in the Arab world. But the Muslim nations and societies themselves are also partly to blame for neglecting the great aspects of scientific, philosophical, and artistic heritage of the Islamic culture. We often hear nostalgic statements and speeches full of empty pride about the great achievements of Islam. But we seldom see studies and lively discussions on the details of how, when, and who created those great achievements. Everywhere you go in the Arab world, you see the Ibn Sina Hospital, Ibn Sina School, or Al-Kindi Hospital, or Al-Kindi School, just the name of the building, or Al-Razi Hospital or School. But how many Arabs or Muslims today really know what those scientific and philosophical giants achieved or how they thought, and also in what atmosphere they worked and thought and created? It's of course not possible to sum the answers for these questions because the homework has not been done to answer them. What I want to do here is to provoke some thoughts and urge people to do this homework because it's urgent now in light of the terrible things being done in the name of Islam and in light of the terrible things being done to Muslims and Muslim societies and the other minorities living within them. Now, as I have written in Executive Intelligence Review and made presentations in previous occasions, the Islamic Renaissance, whose golden age extended from the late 8th century into the end of the 13th century, was not simply Islamic. May we have the map? Okay. Now this is a map of the trade routes in the what was called the Islamic world or the dominions of the Islamic world between the 10th and the 14th century. And it's an amazing, the density of large cities is so amazing at that time that even today there are less such major cities in these regions, especially in the Sahara areas. So this was the where the Islamic so-called empire or different states extended from China to Spain, but also this thanks to the Silk Road, the expansion and the economic development and scientific exchange, which is a totally other theme between China and the Islamic world and other cultures. So just to give you an image of the of what it was not simply Arab. It was not simply Islamic, it was not simply Arab. Although Arabic was the lingua franca of the time from the borders of China to in the east to the northern to northern Spain in the west. I may dare even to say that the Islamic Renaissance was not a religious phenomenon. Although it was based on the teachings of Islam, which urged the believers to seek knowledge from the cradle to the grave. The Islamic Renaissance was rather a cultural phenomenon, a unique one, because it was a synthesis of Arabic, Persian, Greek, Egyptian, Indian, Chinese, and other cultures. In Baghdad in the 9th century, You had Muslims, Christians, and Jews, scientists, and translators in the House of Wisdom working without prejudice to translate and verify Greek, Indian, Chinese, Persian, and all kinds of scientific and philosophical manuscripts. The same thing was going on in Cordoba, in Andalusia, Spain. Now, in order to give a metaphorical image of this beautiful synthesis, I chose this piece. I chose this one. It's called the Elephant Clock. It's a water clock that tells the time. This is the design, the original design, which is in a manuscript. This work was done by Badi' al-Zaman al-Jazari, who lived between the year 1136 and 1206 in the Al Jazeera area, northeast of modern Syria. Al Jazeera means the island, but here it refers to the land between the Tigris and Euphrates. He lived in the time of the Ayyubid dynasty, which, like the Saladin, is the most known leader of that dynasty. Al-Jazari was a true polymath. He was a mathematician, painter, artist, artisan, musician, mechanical engineer, etc. He dealt with almost everything. As an earlier version of Leonardo da Vinci. He also practiced and developed the miniature painting, which also comes from China and other areas. His most known book is The Book of Knowledge of Ingenious Mechanical Devices. Actually, the original Arabic title says something like Combining Science and Beneficial Work in Mechanics. In this book, he describes about 100 mechanical inventions he had made and how they can be reconstructed or built. He made miniature paintings with instructions on how to build these mechanical works, so everybody can do them. Now, the introduction of paper production from China helped actually spread this kind of work on a massive scale in all the Islamic countries. Now, what is interesting for me and for you is not the mechanics themselves, but the method of thinking, which is a great metaphor for the true dialogue of cultures. Both Al-Jazari had in mind and what he understood to be the real message of Islam, which is a dialogue of cultures. But let's take a look just briefly on this toy. It's the elephant, the whole structure is about 4 to 5 meters. It's usually placed in a palace yard or in a mosque. On the top, you have a bird, which turns on a pivot. You have a box with 12 metal balls with windows that indicate the 12 hours of the day. You have this figure sitting there and swinging to the right and the left, and there are two falcons on each side. There is a dragon, two dragons on each side that also swing on a pivot. There is this figure with a hammer and a cymbal. And then you have the body of the elephant. You have a scribe here sitting with a pen indicating actually the minutes of the hour and turning around. Now, the ball, the mechanism works like there's a water tank inside the elephant, a large water tank, and there is a bucket or a ball of wood with a hole in it. And it fills water once in every hour and then sinks into the bottom of the tank. When it does that, there is a rope connected to the box with the balls, and it triggers a mechanism that makes one of the balls fall down, hit the rotating bird. The bird will rotate, and because there's a flute inside the bird, it makes a chirping sound. every hour. Then the ball goes down through the mouth of one of these frogs. This gentleman releases it into the mouth of the dragon. And the dragon turns because of the weight. This is the second dragon. Because of the weight of the ball, and drops the ball here. Another mechanism, it triggers this guy to hit the cymbal. And then the ball goes down, and then the bucket is lifted again for the next hour. Now this scribe is also tied to another rope. With every half an hour, when the bucket is half filled, it will turn. It helps this figure to rotate and point to the minutes and so on. So the mechanics is not the real issue. Al-Jazri consciously put a phoenix bird on the top. This is a phoenix bird, which is a symbol, symbolizes. He intentionally did that. This symbolizes the Egyptian culture, because this, the bird of phoenix is a symbol for the Egyptian mythological Bennu deity. This is an Islamic guy sitting there on the top. The dragon symbolizes China. This figure is an Indian deity. And also, of course, the whole elephant, the elephant also symbolizes India. The scribe is a Muslim who's learning to read and write. But the water technology is Greek. This is what the Arabs studied, Archimedes and all this. So he consciously combined all these culture. Of course, the phoenix also reflects the Greek, partly Greek culture. But he wanted to symbolize and encapsulate all these wonderful and beautiful cultures that have contributed to this wonder. And that's the real spirit of the Islamic Renaissance. I'm just going to read the final section. I say, Al-Jazri consciously put a phoenix bird on the top, which represents the ancient Egyptian mythological deity Bennu, and is also part of the Greek culture. As you may all know, Egypt and Greek for certain important periods were almost one culture, as we understand from Plato's dialogues and the later collaboration between Archimedes and Eratosthenes, the dean of the Library of Alexandria. The serpent or dragons symbolize China. The elephant and the deity with the symbol refers to India. The architecture, furniture are Persian and Arabian, and the water technique is a reference to Greece. This work, in a very beautiful and efficient way, reflects and encapsulates the whole idea of the beauty of the Islamic culture and the spirit of the diversity and the oneness that was dominant at that time. The Holy Quran states, "O mankind, indeed we created you from one male and one female, and made you into peoples and tribes that you may know one another. Indeed, the most noble of you in the eyes of Allah are the most righteous ones." So the big question is, can we revive that spirit today? Thank you very much.